Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
The most beautiful spring days here in the Pacific Northwest.
We're going to get rain, don't you?
Yes, but we need that because a lot of folks have been out in their yards planting and getting their lawns ready. So, yeah, now they need some rain. Plus, I'm heading out on vacation.
Plus, you don't care.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yesterday, for the first time, I was out on my back patio.
So nice.
Yes, lounging, reading. You know what? I'm reading a business book instead right now.
Well, if you can at least be on your deck.
Yeah. Well, all day long, I read medical journal articles. And then in the evening, I go home and read business books.
Oh, man. Sounds fun, right, Dr. Umat?
Sure. Lots of fun.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. Dr. Samira Umat in the studio this week. We are live. And Dr. Jerry Mixon back. And you have been gone spring breaking with family, but also learning and getting some more information about, well, what we do, longevity, and what we can expect. Yeah. So why don't you talk about that for just a bit?
I was at the age management group meeting down in Miami. It was an interesting meeting. I had Friday, Saturday, and then half day Sunday, so about 20 hours of meetings. And, it was interesting. Learned a fair bit of some of the new stuff that people are talking about. Learned some of it that was garbage.
listened to it, not learned it.
That's right. Yeah, I listened to the presentations. But, doctors, especially doctors in a cutting-edge area like longevity, they are sometimes enthusiasts. They will pick one thing and say, this is what will do it. This is the one, the be-all, the end-all. And human biology is too complex for that. There is no one fountain of youth. You just don't reverse the damage and the changes that we've encountered over the decades with any one intervention. When I started this clinic back in the 90s, we were of the opinion that the major thing that we had to do was hormone balancing.
Yeah.
That we had to, instead of just giving people a little estrogen, a little testosterone and something, we needed to do a comprehensive test, look at where people had been in their 20s, and then give them back the hormonal tools their body needed to work with and that they no longer had. And indeed, that makes a big difference. Decreasing levels of the anabolic hormones mean that every year we get weaker. Our muscles get softer and more flaccid, and we don't make as much muscle. And the important muscles that we don't think of, I'm not talking about your biceps and your quads, I'm talking about your heart. Your heart gets weaker. The peristaltic muscles in your esophagus and your gut get weaker so that things don't go through anymore. You get constipated, you get reflux, you got things coming back up. The diaphragm that separates the abdomen from the chest is getting thinner and weaker. And moving back to youthful anabolic hormone load makes a big difference. But there's other things. Mm-hmm. Our mitochondria, the organelles within every cell in our body that are producing the energy for life, are getting old and frail and decreasing in numbers. And so none of the cells in your body are producing as much energy as they did. And that includes your brain. Your neurons are not working as well. They're not firing as well. Your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, everything is going down. I went through a couple of months ago and toted up 12 different areas that we have to address. You know, when I started this 26 years ago, it was hormones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the hormones are still important. They are critical as a base.
Yeah.
But we now have 12 different aspects of aging that we have to address if we're going to do it right. So there is no one thing we can do. We have to look at all 12. And what I postulate is that in the next 26 years, we'll come up with 12 more.
Uh-huh.
We'll probably have 25, you know, that we have to address.
The same, the pathways and the biology and the physiology exists. It's just we don't know what to call it, and mm-hmm. people will figure out what it is,
yes.
and more information and will those be
things,
available.
And yeah. those things will get added. So, yeah. so what was a fairly simple clinic 26 years ago, we are now doing far more complex and involved things than we did 26 years ago.
Right. It's very true because, you know, even in those days, 1 hour is a long time to do a review. But now I often find that 1 hour is not enough.
Mm. I know.
But patients' ability to absorb a lot of information hasn't changed. So you have to kind of tease out what is the most important for this visit today and then give a summary and go, there's lots of things, but today let's focus on this.
Yeah, and actually, as the boss man here, I have been thinking about that because as I'm looking at how complex it's getting, our 1 hour visits are far better than the traditional doctor who's in the room 5 minutes.
That's you right.
Know?
Yes.
I mean, you know, mostly you see an aide, and then you see a nurse, and then you see an MA, and then finally the doctor bips in for 5 minutes, and he's gone.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do in 5 minutes. There just isn't. So our visits were revolutionary when we started doing them. But that means if you're going to see a full hour with every patient and you're going to do it 4 or 5 times a year, one doctor can only see a total of about 220 patients in a year.
Absolutely, yeah. That's not very many.
It limits the number of patients we can see, and that drives the cost up.
Mm-hmm.
Because doctors are our most expensive cost. Yeah. And then you throw in the laboratory and the support staff and yada, yada, and the rental for the space. But what you're alluding to is the fact that we probably either need to expand the time that the doctor's with the patient, but the reality is most patients can't absorb an hour and a half or 2 hours worth of information.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Or we have to start seeing them more often.
Mm.
Instead of seeing them every 3 months, we may have to cut that down to every 6 weeks or something. But that then cuts down the number of patients a doctor can see.
Mm-hmm.
And that in turn means you got to raise the prices because everybody wants to get paid for their work.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that.
Yes. You know, those scandalous people at the front desk, they actually want to get paid.
What?
But and so it's a quandary.
Mm-hmm.
And I have gone to great lengths to keep the cost of our clinics as low as I possibly can. We are by far the most cost-effective, the least expensive comprehensive program of this type in the United States. There's a lot of people that do a little piece of this and they do a little of that, and maybe they'll give you bioidentical hormones or maybe they'll do this thing. But to get the comprehensive program that addresses it all, we're the only ones that can do it at this price. But even here, we're bumping up against,
mm-hmm.
as things get more complex, as we have more and more things we can do. So,
well, I mean, every couple of weeks we get requests for, can we add this blood test? We need to do this. We need to start measuring this again.
Yeah.
And I understand that, and we need to
Our
move
doctors
with
want
the
to
science.
Do it, but...
We do want to do it, but...
But, you know, how much... Do we want to charge our patients?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was down in Miami, I had a group of people. This was at the Trump Doral.
Okay.
This is one of Trump's highest end golf courses, you know, $1,000 a night rooms.
Wow, beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. But I was meeting with some folks that want me to put a clinic down there. And, you know, they were saying, but Dr. Mixon, you're undercharging. You ought to be charging $50,000, $60,000 a year for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm trying to take this to as many people as I can.
Yeah.
If I'm charging $60,000 or even $70,000 a year for my services, the number of people I can treat is small. And they said, well, not down here.
Down here, really?
All of our friends could afford it. Okay, but not my friends.
Yes.
I don't hang around with folks who have a few $100 million in the bank. You know, my patients have a net income, usually in the neighborhood of $70,000 or $80,000 a year. That's our patient population. And when you retire, your income doesn't usually keep climbing.
Nope.
You're fixed.
Right.
You know, and with Bidenomics giving us 20% inflation in the last 3 years, you know, the guy that was making 80 now needs to make 100 to buy the same stuff he made when Biden took office.
Yes.
And the retired people didn't get an income that went up $20,000.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's a quandary. I want to do more and more for people, but the more I do, the more time it takes, the less time I can spend with each patient, or the more time I need to spend with each patient, but that means each doctor can treat fewer people, and that means the cost goes up. I'm not quite sure what to do about it, quite frankly. It's, you know, it's one of those things. I'm trying to find ways, you know, to make each visit more cost effective, where we can accomplish more with less doctor time. What can we automate? What can we automate that would go to the patients by email on a weekly basis in bite-sized groups, you know, that we can, when this lab work comes in, I can send out that message to them and they get messages each week, or they, maybe we can write an app that they can report to us and say, this is happening. And then we can say, okay, if this comes in, we send back that.
Well, with our new EMR, they'll be able to communicate with us as much as they want.
Yes, okay. But again, that chews up more doctor time.
That's
exactly
right.
Exactly, it does.
And so, yeah.
Cloning. You know. We need to clone our doctors,
yeah,
Dr.
many
Mixon.
Of my patients have asked me, does that mean I can email you and text you now and send you a message? Yes, they can through electronic health records. They absolutely can.
Yep. On the other hand, I've noticed that there is a national movement among physicians and clinics that the doctor is now charging $35 per text message.
Well, they have to respond to it. It requires opening up the chart, looking at what you did and what you said. Because, you know, I understand. I'm not blaming the patient. You know, they get 2 minutes, 5 minutes with the physician. They think of something they needed to ask. They didn't get it asked. They send a note and go, hey, I wanted to know about this. That's not their fault, right?
Mm-hmm. No.
But now the doctor says, well, your visit is over. I've seen my 30 patients. I'm sitting at home. So if I need to look at this again, I have to pull up your chart, use my family time, think about a response, and then respond.
Yes.
So all doctors are doing electronic health records every night from home.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And they do deserve to get paid for that.
Yes, of course. They're working. It is 10:15. We hear the music. We're taking a break, and we will be back with Kathy, Gary, and Judy to kick off our show. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and here is the number to get in the queue, 206-421-5757.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. And I can't wait to get on the road again.
On the road again, and we are back. And Dr. Mixon, last time we heard this, we were like, yeah, Dr. Mixon was on the road again.
And and you know, I actually play this song sometimes when we were on a family road trip.
Fun.
My wife loves road trips.
Oh, yes.
I hate them. That's because I'm always driving.
Yeah, well,
you know, she's over in shotgun seat saying, oh, look at this. Look at that. Oh, isn't that beautiful? And I'm saying, White line. What? White line just to my left.
Very good. Oh, well, we are back. This is Leading Edge Medicine live in the studio. Here is the number to call us with your questions, 206-421-5757. And to start off the show, we're headed to Gig Harbor. We have Kathy on the line. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, guys. Listen, before I get to my question, Dr. Mixum, after that femur ball, did you ever go skiing again?
Oh, yes, sure.
How soon after?
I waited about a year because it was the next ski season. I broke it in late February of one ski season, so I had to wait until January of the following year because there wasn't enough snow. But, yeah, I was actually on stage doing a seminar. I broke it Sunday evening, had it done at midnight Sunday night, and I was on stage doing a seminar Thursday.
Oh, my.
So. Wow.
I mean, how you must have been loaded with painkillers. I don't know.
I can't take painkillers. Mm. If I take a single narcotic, a single codeine pill, I'll puke for 3 days straight, day and night.
What You're did lucky. You do? How did you deal with the pain? How did you deal with it?
I learned decades ago to compartmentalize pain. You got to remember, when I was young and foolish, I have lots of gunshot and shrapnel wounds. You know, I had a bullet wound in my right forearm that cut all my extensor tendons to the right hand. I had two bullets through the left arm. One smashed my elbow. I had a hand grenade shred my left knee. I took a bullet in the right ankle, one in the right thigh, one skimmed down my back and blew off about half the right side of my butt.
How are you walking? I mean, I don't understand.
I have shrapnel.
He was discharged as disabled from the military. Yeah.
I have shrapnel all up and down my left arm, and I've got a little piece of metal in the diaphragm right under my heart that is still sitting there.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Right
and
now?
I have a bayonet wound.
Oh, a bayonet.
That was close combat.
This is terrible.
But the Army kicked me out.
I'm so sorry, you know.
The Army kicked me out and told me I was 90%.
So trivial compared to this. But
the Army told me I was 90% permanently disabled.
What is PRP?
PRP.
Great question. We should have elaborated.
Yes.
We didn't.
That's right. We should have. We're sorry. Platelet-rich plasma.
It's your own blood. It's your own blood.
Yeah, what we do is we take
plasma. That was my next question. Then I read somewhere, I don't know if it was an art magazine or whatever, that stem cell, you may have to repeat it in, you know, 3-4 months or whatever. And I mean, not you. You probably didn't, I guess. But with blood plasma, it can last up to a year. And I'm wondering, I mean, what do you think about blood plasma as opposed to stem cell?
Okay. Let me clarify a few things. Okay.
Yeah, and we have to know what we're treating here.
That's right. Yeah, it depends in part.
My husband's knee, and what do you have wrong with his knee? I know, but what about what's wrong with it?
Well, they say the cushion.
Okay, the very thin cushion between the two bones.
Yeah, so the cartilage is worn away.
Cartilage.
All right.
And he's 72, so. You know, we get shot to hell, you know that. Not you, but I don't know. You were shot literally to hell, and wow, you've made an amazing comeback.
Yeah, well, and that's you know, part of the game, but that's where I understand, you know, the middle class. I was a combat paratrooper. I mean, I jumped into the jungles with 70 pounds of equipment on my back and, you know, and hunted my enemy. And it was close combat, as you can tell. You don't get bayonet wounds at a distance.
Were you in Vietnam?
Yes. Yeah, I was in Vietnam. Yeah. I was a combat paratrooper with the 173rd Airborne.
Oh my gosh.
We were very proud of being the most lethal things in the jungle. Mm. So.
And you sure took a beating. Thank you for your service, Dr. Mixum. And in every way, look at what he does now. I mean, it's still service.
Yeah, it is. And, well, you know, actually, my youthful military experience was extremely violent, as you can tell from my own injuries. I killed more men than you see in the average horror movie. And there's a price to pay for that because people think that when you put on a uniform, it somehow is different, but it's not. It may be different if you're dropping a bomb from 30,000 feet, but when you're toe to toe and eye to eye and you're fighting someone and one of you is going to die in the next 3 seconds, it's personal. Okay. And and you carry that with you for the rest of your life. It never really goes away. Mm. It forms who and what I am. But the reality is that I value that on many levels. Mm. For one thing, the only time in a man's life that he will be with other men who will literally die to protect his life is in combat and military. When a guy in my team said, I'll cover the right flank, and someone else said, I'll do the left flank, and I took my segment, I knew for a certainty no one was going to come at me past those guys while they were alive. They would literally die before anyone got to me. And I had to give them the same honor and respect. No one was coming past me to hurt my guys while I was breathing. Okay.
Yeah.
You never,
you should
ever
have a reunion if there's any left, and hopefully there,
there aren't. I am the only survivor.
Have a reunion with them?
I am the only survivor in the team.
Okay.
But yeah, it's so on that respect, you know, I have a team of executives who work with me now in my companies, and I may ask them to risk their reputation. I may ask them to risk some money for me, but I don't ask them to risk their lives for me. Okay?
Right. Right.
So to have the honor to work with men of that caliber, of that degree of courage, and let them count you among their members is, it's terribly humbling. You know, you have to say, God. You know, there's an old saying that says,
it makes me want to cry when I think of what you've gone through. My dad went through stuff too, but I mean, and you're, but what you do, I mean, you, no one would ever know by seeing you, by listening to you, that you even had all that pain and all that anguish. So,
but you see, when I got out, I had no skills. I had no skills except blowing things up and killing people.
And jumping out of airplanes.
I could jump out of airplanes. I could use a knife, a machine gun, a garrote, you could name it. If it was a weapon, I could use it. But I had the trauma. There was a great deal of emotional trauma. And so I had to decide what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And in a odd way, this was my way of coping with the post-traumatic stress. I decided that I never wanted to harm another human being as long as I lived. And as I thought about it, becoming a physician and dedicating my life to helping people to live better, happier, longer lives seemed to be the best solution. So
I can't think of a better one personally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so,
you know, so become, for all of you, I mean, what's better than helping us, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So becoming a physician is my reaction to the violence of my youth. And so I would never have become a doctor had that not happened.
And look at so many people around here and whoever else is listening elsewhere, we wouldn't have been helped. I mean,
that's right.
You see what I mean? So there's a reason for a lot of things. Yeah. You know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who says, Jerry, you're the only man I know that could fall in a barrel of poop and come up smelling like rosewater.
So. Yes. Yes.
That's a nice way of saying that.
The power of positivity and having joy and a passion in your life.
Yes. And I do have a wonderful life. And I am so grateful for all the things I'm allowed to do for people. You know, this is my core identity. You know, people say I identify as an aardvark.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I identify as a physician. That is the core of my identity, and so it's what I do 24/7.
Finally, something normal. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, I won't even get into that. You know.
Oh, Kathy, that's awesome.
Yeah, but it's true.
Anyway, Kathy, I'm sorry we digressed terribly.
I love your topic. I don't even care about mine anymore. But in all honesty, I don't. But blood plasma as opposed to because of his cartilage.
Yes, okay. All right. We have got to take a break. We're at the end, at the bottom of the hour. But you hang on. Don't go away. And I'm going to talk to you about plasma. I'm going to talk to you about exosomes. I'm going to talk to you about stem cells. And I'm going to talk to you about platelet-rich plasma, because those are four very different and critically important things to understand.
All right. We will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine and your calls. Judy, we're going to talk with you in just a bit. And Carol, your call is coming up. Gary, we lost you. Feel free to call us back and we'll get you on. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back. Stay there.
I mean...
Medicine, and guess who's back? It's Dr. Mixon.
Oh, it's so easy.
Oh, yeah.
And
Doctor,
so much fun.
Dr. Samira Umat. Oh, boy, just wait till we get the video going, and we are
only
laughing.
I can only roll
oh,
my eyes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we can only roll them so many times.
Yeah. Well, and the thing will be then, what do we wear? You know, if we're doing the country western, we should all wear our boots and, you know, checkered shirts.
Okay.
And then if we do the classics, we should be coming in our suits and nice dresses.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be a theme weeks.
How about the Rock? Okay. Can we be in black, all black?
Oh, and- yeah. Hey, yeah. We got to get what was that movie about the discos?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're thinking of Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, yeah. We can all do our, you know, Saturday Night Fever 70s, you know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I could do big hair. Oh, wait. I already,
you already have big hair.
Yeah, I already have big hair.
Can we get a spinning ball in the ceiling? The
kind of... Actually, yes. I can hook you up with one of those. We had one that
Let
we would
the
put on.
Imagination go wild.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, we've got Kathy hanging on the line. We're going to continue to talk about the different things, PRP, stem cells.
Yeah. Okay, let's start with PRP. That's the simplest.
Do you guys hear me?
Yes, we do.
Okay, I would love, and I really mean this, and I know you ladies will agree, you have got to write a book. You could call it something like From Soldier to Surgeon, or you know what I'm saying. I mean, who isn't going to want to hear what I heard and more of it, because it is so fascinating.
You know
what?
He has a book. He
how
wrote one.
To this point, I mean, would you consider that?
Yeah.
He's already done it.
I actually put a chapter or so about how I became a physician.
Mm-hmm. In my, takes more than a chapter, though.
Book.
Come on.
Yeah.
I guess this is too fascinating for one chapter. So.
All right.
I'm just saying, if you could ever make it even more, that would be so interesting.
I know. You know, I've been asked to write books about combat experiences before, and here's my problem with it. I don't like to. If you delve into it deeply, you have to relive it.
Okay,
And much of that part of my life is not something I want to relive.
It would give those people, though, that haven't been able to get to where you have, maybe some hope. Well, wait a minute, he did it. He went through all that. I went through some of that. I don't know. It might be inspiring, too. So, it's your call.
Yeah. But, okay, let's move on to PRP here for a minute.
All righty.
Okay. platelet-rich plasma. What we do is we take your blood and we spin it down. We take off the red and white cells, and that encompasses about almost 50% of the blood. And then we spin it again at a much higher speed, and we pack the platelets down into the bottom of the tube. Mm-hmm. And we pull off that platelet-poor plasma from the top of the tube, about half of that, and either throw it away or save it for other purposes because it's got good nutrients. And then we take that bottom half and mix it up again and get all of those platelets concentrated in a small volume. And that's why it's called platelet-rich plasma. Okay? It now has 3 or 4 times more platelets than your plasma originally had. Okay? Now, platelets are designed to repair breaks in your blood vessels. They circulate in your blood all the time. And every time you get bumped and bruised, little tiny blood vessels will break. Mm. And as soon as there's a break, those platelets rush to the break. They form a clot, a little matrix that closes off the break. And they rupture and they release 9 different growth factors. And those growth factors make that blood vessel repair really fast. Okay, so that's what platelet-rich plasma is. It's actually a concentrated 9 growth factors that your body uses to heal and grow and repair tissue. So
even that cartridge in his knee, the thinning next to nothing cartridge he has left, cartilage?
It helps to some degree. Okay. Now, it's a potent anti-inflammatory.
Right.
And so the doctors that are doing these stem cells in knees will put in both stem cells and platelet-rich plasma. The platelet-rich plasma provides nutrition and health growth factors for the stem cells and makes the stem cells work much more efficiently. So normally, if all you got is a bursitis, an inflammatory process around the joint, the PRP is enough. But if you're trying to regrow tissue, you need to get the stem cells in there too.
Yeah. And Dr. Nelson would check for that, right? He wouldn't just do one or the other. He would check to see if we needed both.
Yes. And if he decides it's just a bursitis, he just does the platelets usually. If he says, no, we've got to grow some new tissue and enhance this healing, he'll do the stem cells and the PRP. And then he'll often bring you back in a few weeks and do an extra PRP to give a boost to those stem cells. Mm-hmm. The stem cells live about 3 months. So they're in there kicking out chemicals to heal and repair for about 3 months before they're gone.
You don't have to do it over, do you?
You don't have to, although with my hip, I did it twice about 6 or 8 months apart because I got healing. I got enough healing that my hip was much better, but I make serious demands on my body. I don't live a normal life. And so I wanted it better. So I went back and did it a second time.
And then that's it? You didn't have to do it again?
I've never done it since. It's been several years. And the typical morning, I get out and run about 3 miles on that hip.
Wow. You're a walking miracle, you guys. I mean, I don't know.
Pretty powerful, huh?
Miracle.
Yeah. Now, there's another thing, because stem cells, we used to think that when we took stem cells out and we injected them, the stem cells were actually growing into new tissue. We now know that's not true. Mm. Okay, it's a misconception that we had, but the doctors were wrong. Mm. What's really happening is the stem cells are in the joint for about 3 months before your body clears them, but they're kicking out exosomes and acellular vesicles. And those exosomes are little bits of membrane that bud off from the stem cell that contain messenger RNA that go into your tissues and tell your tissue, grow, heal, repair.
Do they stay there?
Those messenger RNA will go into those cells and they'll live as long as those cells live. Yes. But when those cells wear out and need to get replaced, you'd need to put in new messenger RNA if you had not grown enough. But we call those exosomes and acellular vesicles. Okay, what we can now do is, in addition to stem cells, you can actually produce exosomes, freeze-dry them. They survive. Stem cells won't. And these concentrated, very low-temperature stored exosomes can then be injected. And they contain the messenger RNA and so on of the stem cells. So
is this a third option then?
It's a third option. The problem with the exosomes, everything we do in medicine has pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
The exosomes are so small that if you inject them into your knee, in 20 minutes, they're in your whole body. They go right into the blood vessels and circulate. So exosomes tend to help the entire body because you're basically getting the stem cell effect but diluted because you're diluting it through your whole body. So for a joint like your husband, I'd say PRP and stem cells. But for a beat-up old man like me that I want my whole body doing better, I do the exosomes.
Yeah, but I mean, who wouldn't want their whole body doing better? I don't know who wouldn't. So why wouldn't we do the exosomes
cost,
or whatever?
Cost.
Yes.
Cost.
Oh, okay.
It's about $4,000 a pop. And it has to be done about 4 times a year. So you're looking at about $16,000 a year.
Yeah, unfortunately, as much as I'd want to, we can't.
Right.
There you go.
And that's why, but I figure, hey, I own the joint.
There you go.
No, you have a right, especially
yes,
with
you
what
are.
You went to do whatever the heck you want to do. So.
That's right.
Okay.
That
hey,
is
Kathy,
right.
We got to go. Our music is going to start.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Lots of great information talking about, and it's good to know what's the difference between all these things, how often do I need to do them, and of course got a little bit of history on Dr. Mixon as well. That's always fun is not the word to talk about, so but very insightful to talk about because you know where you've been and you know what you had to do to get where you are now,
yep.
And you want to help others.
And I got all kinds of places I still want to go.
Oh, I know.
I ain't done yet.
No, he's not. Ah, and we just got him back for a little while, so we are going to take a quick break. Judy, we're going to talk with you next, and Carol, you as well. This is Leading Edge Medicine. If you've got a question for the doctors, here's the number, 206-421-5757. We'll be back.
Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette Morgan. So glad to be with you on this beautiful Saturday morning by right next to two wonderful doctors. We have Dr. Samira Umat in the studio live today, as well as Dr. Jerry Mixon, and talking with you about your health concerns, perhaps symptoms that you have, or things about aging. They're the experts. Want to help you with as much as we can today. Here is that number to call in, 206-421-5757. We're headed to Tacoma now, and we have Judy on the line. Good morning, Judy. Thank you for your patience.
Hello, Judy.
Well, thank you for taking my call and for all these Saturday mornings. You guys have entertained me and informed me. It really should be just a public service announcement.
Anyway, right.
You really should. You really, the reason I'm calling is I hope you can give me a little more information regarding to a diagnosis my husband has as prostate cancer. And the answer to what to do is to just wait another year and do another biopsy. Evidently, it's not an aggressive form. But to me, it just doesn't seem reasonable to do nothing and let it fester. I didn't know if there was something that he could do on the side that would be helpful and beneficial to
there are things he can do,
yes.
But it's not an outrageous concept. So let's talk a little bit about prostate cancer in general.
Okay.
There was an interesting study done back in the 1990s that in Detroit. And I give all of my new doctors a copy of this study because we call it the Detroit study. In Detroit, back in the 90s, they went out and every male of any age who died, they did an autopsy on their prostate. They extracted the entire prostate gland and they sectioned it. That is, they did real thin slices. They stained it. They were looking for prostate cancer in men from 18 to 90. Okay. You died, you got examined. And what they found was fascinating. By the time men were in their 20s, there was about a 20% chance that if you look closely enough at their prostate, you could find a little bit of cancer in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
In their 30s, it was 30%. In their 40s, it was 40%. In their 50s, it was 50%. By the time you got up into their 70s and 80s, it was 70, 75% of men had some degree of prostate cancer hiding in their prostate if you looked at it closely enough.
Mm.
And yet, only about 8% of men are diagnosed with prostate cancer. So even by my age, I've got about a 75% chance of having some prostate cancer in there.
Mm.
There's a relatively small chance that it's ever going to cause me any trouble.
Mm.
Because it turns out that our immune system is apparently very good at suppressing the growth of most prostate cancers. Okay. So now let's move that now into the clinical. Your husband was found to have a prostate cancer. How was it found? Was his PSA rising and they did a biopsy?
Actually, he's had issues with his prostate and the PSA rising and going down for years and years, and he had a biopsy about 10 years ago. And this is done by that random one where they just go in and they just start plucking.
Yeah, 12 random cores, yes.
Yeah, and that's what they did several years ago, and his prostate is very enlarged, so he had to resume. I could tell you everything you really need to know about that, and which is very good, don't get me wrong, but I mean,
sure.
Nothing's in and out. But, and again, this was his prostate reading was, you know, like 19. And then by the time they actually did the, but he usually runs around 13, 12, 13 anyway. And when they did the exam, like a month later, it was down to 13 again. But they did find this cancer reading. And, and I just like, well, there must be something on the side. There, I mean, there is no oncologist or anything like that, which is a good thing. I'm not complaining that, you know, I just, of all the diagnoses, I just feel like there should be something that would be beneficial for him.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. When you find a prostate cancer that is what we refer to as an indolent or a low-grade cancer, we grade prostate cancers by what's called a Gleason score. And it goes all the way up to 10, okay? Scores below 6 are not yet cancerous, but they can be inflamed. There can be some abnormal but not yet malignant tissues. Those are usually connected with infections and stuff. Gleason 6 is an early prostate cancer. Gleason 7 is still a fairly early cancer that is not showing signs of spread and aggression as yet. What we now know is that if you look at men who have six Gleason 6 and 7 cancers, and you do nothing but watch them over a 15-year period, 93% of those men will never have any problem. Their immune system is suppressing the cancer to the point that, yes, it's there, but it's not growing fast, it's not causing them any trouble, and they're never going to die from it. 93% of the time. Now, it's that other 7% we worry about.
So, yeah, that's what you want. You don't want to be.
That's right. You don't want to be in that other 17. But the odds are, you see, that if you find a Gleason 6 or 7, the odds are you can sit tight and watch it, do an MRI on it once every year. If it's not getting any bigger, if it's not showing any signs of spread, he'll probably live out his life and die of something else long before that cancer causes him any grief. 93% odds. Hey,
well, how old is he?
That's pretty neat.
Yeah,
he's 77.
Okay, so yeah, so he's my age.
He works. He works 10, 12 hours a day. He has his own business, so I mean, he's he could always be in better health. I mean, but
so can I. And I'm always working on it. So, yeah, that's right. But yeah, it's so your doctor's decision to sit and watch it for a year is not bad, because 93% of the time he's going to come back in a year and say, you know what, there's no signs of growth, let's just sit tight. And he could go another 20 years and never have a problem with that prostate. Now, the fact that he's got a big and large prostate and he's had very high PSAs tells me there's a lot of inflammation and so on in that prostate. And inflamed prostates form cancer more often than non-inflamed prostates. And that inflammation has a higher incidence of triggering rapid growth in that cancer eventually. So it is one you'd want to watch more closely than average. What can you do to decrease the risk of it growing? What can you do short of medications? Okay, here's your list. All right. Green tea. Green tea catechins. Not black tea, green tea. Not fruit tea, not chamomile. Old-fashioned green tea.
Okay, green tea.
You sprinkle it on your salads, on your food.
You got it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yes, absolutely. Green tea catechins, the epigallocatechin gallate. There's one you can say fastly.
I like that. Epigallocatechin gallate.
Epicatechin gallate. Yeah.
Anyway.
ECGC. The ECGC has an anti-prostate cancer effect. In fact, there's about 6 or 7 different cancers that it inhibits the growth of. And prostate cancer is a biggie. So lots and lots of green tea. He should be getting the equivalent of 5 cups of green tea per day. All right.
Okay.
So if he doesn't want to drink 5 cups of green tea a day, like I said, open one of those tea bags, sprinkle it in his salads, put it in his lasagna, put it wherever.
You know, if that's going to help you, you drink it anyway. Yeah. Whether you want to or not, you just drink it.
Well, yeah. It's one of my favorite drinks. You know, we always have a great big pot of tea sitting on our counter. My wife throws about 20 bags of green tea into this big pitcher and runs hot water in it, and it sits on our counter all the time. And every time I walk by, if my mouth is dry, I drink the tea instead of the water. Okay? It's unsweetened. It has nothing except green tea. But so anyway, epigallic, catechin, gallate. That's your number one thing you're looking for. The second one is lutein, but it's lutein-containing foods. It's not isolated lutein supplements.
Okay,
and
what are those?
So those are things like tomato paste, marinara sauce, potato or tomato products. And for some reason, the tomato needs to be either cooked or squished to release the chemicals that are helping. Now, the reason I say the chemicals that are helping instead of the lutein or the lycopene, I'm sorry, lycopene, not lutein. I misspoke. The lycopene, we have done studies in which we gave prostate cancer men lycopene supplements, and it didn't help. Mm. It did not help. But the lycopene-containing vegetables do help. So there's something in those veggies in addition to the lycopene. So it's probably lycopene plus something we haven't identified. Mm. But when I've got a patient with prostate cancer, I tell them, take tomato paste, which is concentrated tomatoes, and use it instead of mayonnaise. Put it on your sandwiches. Spread it on your baked chicken. Put your tomato paste on everything you can, and you're getting high-dose lycopene compounds.
Good to know.
Sounds
all right. I know. Now we're hungry, right, Judy? Hey, we've got to run. Hour number two on the way. We've got a quick break. Did you have any other questions, Judy?
Yeah, I'm going to tell her a couple more things for prostate cancer. So
yep,
hang on, Judy, till after this break.
We'll hang on the line. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.